Good morning again. I feel to make the announcement that Fifth Sunday Singing will be at Cameron Avenue on the fifth Sunday this month. So if you can, hopefully you'll be able to make plans to attend. We can get together and sing songs of praise. And not only sing it ourselves, but we can sing it with other Christians also. As I said in the this morning in the Sunday school lesson, I'm glad that all of you are here. Evidently, y'all show me that you haven't gotten tired of me yet, so I'm thankful. But hopefully I can impart a message to you this morning that will benefit all of us, myself included. What I wanted to speak on this morning for a few minutes is my subject title is Why Me? Why Me? Two little words. Have they ever crossed your lips? Ever crossed your mind? Maybe in a time of frustration? Maybe in a time of exhaustion? Possibly when you were suffering? You think, why me? Why is the universal question. The word why is found over 200 times in the King James Bible and over 400 times in the New King James. So it's mentioned quite a bit. It's not an unusual word, but it's one that can puzzle us, kind of throw us off a little bit. And in this lesson, I plan to give out a few scriptures. You may not be able to find them immediately, but you can write them down and check back with them later. In Matthew chapter 27, verse 46, Jesus asked, my God, why have you forsaken me? Seems kind of logical. If Jesus asks why, then it's okay for me to ask why. In Job chapter 3, verse 11, Job said, why did I not die at birth? Why did I not perish when I came from the womb? Definitely in times of suffering and in pain, we may ask the question, why? More specifically, why me? From Judges chapter 6, verse 13, Gideon said to the angel, oh, my Lord, if the Lord is with us, why then has all this happened to us? A fairly legitimate question. He couldn't understand. If God be with us, how come we go through so much? And because of the conflict which the psalmist Asaph had with a strong temptation to envy the prosperity of wicked people. That's found in Psalm 73, verses 1 through 14. We can see he pondered why the wicked prospered, while the righteous suffered. I've definitely wondered that one myself. Seems like the more you try to get ahead, as we say, or the more you try to do what's right, the harder things seem to get. But then you look at people that you know they don't have no God in them, and they seem to be just breezing through life, having all the good things, seem like it's good things. But they have a little more than what we have, and they don't seem to suffer as much as we do. And you wonder why. When the day comes that make you ask why, look for a reason, but do not be surprised not to find one immediately. I suggest to you three possible sources of trouble. Number one, living in a mortal body in a fallen world. If you look in Genesis chapter 3, verse 17 through 19, you will see reference to that. By one man, sin entered into the world, and death by sin. And so death passed upon all men, for that all have sinned. Just behind one man. That could be the reason behind a whole lot of problems. As we say, that was the beginning of all the problems. But there's nothing that we could do about that. Could this just be ordinary trouble that everybody has? Just general suffering? Until we arrive at New Jerusalem, we will have sweat, frustration, tears, mournings, sickness, pain, and death. It's found in Revelation chapter 21, verses 1 through 4. All because of one man's sin. And now we live with it. Getting the flu, having a car accident, losing money in a retirement account, and having your dishwasher break are likely general physical things without spiritual meaning. But during general suffering, do not become distracted or discouraged by the cares of life. As talked about in Matthew chapter 13, verse 22, Luke chapter 8, verse 14, and Luke chapter 21, verse 34. It is not so much riches as the deceitfulness of riches that does the mischief. When we put our confidence in deceitfulness and raise our expectations in deceitfulness, then it is deceitfulness that chokes the word. See, we can get so caught up in the material things as they describe to hear the cares of life that we don't even think about what we're doing. Money, there's another saying, money is the root of all evil. It's not so much the root, but it's what we do with it, the desire that we have for it. What will we do for money? Some people go to further extremes than others. But at some point, I think we all get to a point where, because we know we need that, that we do some things that maybe we shouldn't, or we have second thoughts of. I'm not saying that we continually do it, but in order to get what we want, we may let this slide, let that slide, overlook certain things, which is not maybe profitable for a Christian. Therefore, we make mistakes. We're supposed to repent because of that. Now, another source is God's discipline. We find that in Hebrews chapter 12, verse 7. If you endure testing, God deals with you as with sons. For what son is there whom a father does not chasten? That's laying down the law, so to speak. Punishment. When I was coming up, I came from a broken home, so my mama laid down in Chester. And boy, did she lay it down. I did not want to be caught doing wrong. But we all do wrong, so we all get punished at one time or another. Could this be God's discipline for sin in our lives? Is he trying to get us to focus on spiritual things? One, the best of God's children need chastisement. They have their faults and follies, which need to be corrected. Have you ever been somewhere and see somebody with their children and the children be acting up and they just say, stop now, stop. Y'all stop now. And then you see some that be with the parents and they act up and the parents can look at them and they straighten right up. But it's a form of chastisement. And when you don't have that, then they run them up. And we know from experience that we all have problems. As we discussed in our Sunday school lesson this morning, we all are a bunch of crackpots. So nobody's perfect. And if we're crackpots, you can rest assured our children are cracked or chipped or something. Another, though God may let others alone in their sins, He will correct sin in His own children. They are of His family and shall not escape His rebukes. As I just mentioned, some people seem not to discipline their children until that child does something that really gets on their nerves, and then they lay down the law. And it's amazing how the child knows exactly how far to go before that happens. But everybody disciplines their own child. And they prefer to discipline their own child rather than for someone else to discipline them. And to be suffered to go on in sin without a rebuke is a sad sign of alienation from God. That means to be separated from God. They may call Him Father, but they are the offspring of another Father, not of God. If God doesn't chastise you, then that means He doesn't love you. Because He corrects those that He loves. So if He doesn't correct you, that would seem like He doesn't love you. Now, we know from experience also, we try to correct our children or our relatives or someone that's in our family that we see them do wrong for the simple fact, if nothing else, because we don't want them to go out into the street or go anywhere and someone else correct them. And it may be fatal, whether it be the police, whether it be someone that doesn't have the patience with them that you would have with your child, and it becomes fatal, because they may not care as much. But that's why we try to correct them first, to make sure they don't get to that point. But if we don't correct them, especially our own children, then that means that we don't love them. The same way with God. One more source of trouble is Satan's messenger, which is considered a test. We can see that in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 7 and 9. Temptation to sin are most grievous thorns. They are messengers of Satan to strike repeatedly or batter us. Indeed, it is a great grievance to a good man to be so much as tempted to sin. Now, we know Christ has already told us in His word that we're going to have trials and temptations, ups and downs, troubles in this life. We have good days, we have bad days. We're going to have problems, so we can learn to rely more on God. But we do know that Satan is constantly at us to cause us problems. And we spoke this morning in Sunday school about how God may use some people to punish us and correct us. If we take heed, we learn a lesson. We become the better for it. If not, we receive the punishment. God can use anyone he wants, anything he wants, but it's for our good. But we have the choice still to abide or not to abide. Could this be God allowing Satan to test us? The devil tested Job, Jesus, and Peter. Job chapter 1 verse 12, Luke chapter 4 verses 1 through 13, and Luke again chapter 22 verse 31. I'm sure you are familiar with how he tested Job. He lost everything, but in the end, he was blessed with much. Jesus was tempted on the mountain by the devil. And Peter was tried. Christ prayed for him that he would be faithful. You know, when I was going over this, it made me think of the fact that if Satan is so bold that he would even test Jesus, where do I stand? Why do I feel like he wouldn't try to get me? I don't even have half the power, not even an oomph of the power that Christ had. So if he tested Christ and he tried to get him, you can expect what he's going to do to us. But that doesn't mean that he'll win, because we got God on our side. Gold must be tested in fire. Diamonds must be weighed and cut. Wheat must be threshed. Christians must be tested. 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 12 through 15. If God doesn't test us, how does he know our value, our worth? Surely he's not going to go by our word, you know. Oh, God, I'm good. I'm going to do everything you said. And we make mistakes and tell lies, you know. Sometimes we do it on purpose. Sometimes we don't. Sometimes it's an accident. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's intentional, especially if you don't know what they did. We want to get even. But we're not supposed to. Either we have suffered, we are now suffering, or we will suffer. For we must, through many tribulations, enter the kingdom of God. Acts chapter 14, verse 22. Now, if you like me, I know you're looking forward to the day of judgment when we go to heaven and we get our just reward. Reward. What is that for? It's just something that you give out. Hey, y'all know anybody that's staying around and give out money or reward? I like the way you look. I'm going to just give you this. I like you. I'm going to give you that. For no reason. All these game shows they got on television, I don't see them giving away money to nobody. So, when we come to get our reward in heaven, I don't think Christ is going to just give us salvation. That's why we got to do some work while we're here to get our just reward. Nothing is free on this time side of life. He's already paved the way for us, and he's already made it possible. That was free, because we don't have to pay the wages of sin. That was free. But he asked us to do what we're supposed to do, and then we get a reward for it. Paul wrote, "To you it has been granted on behalf of Christ, not only to believe in him, but also to suffer for his sake." Philippians chapter 1, verse 29. So that means that we have to put in some suffering. Now, what is that suffering? To be ridiculed, do some things you don't want to do sometimes, to stand up for Christ, to do right when you see everybody else doing wrong. We have to suffer. I like to think of the fact that on our worst day, on that day when we said, why me? We still would not suffer nowhere compared to what Christ went through. When you think of it like that, it's not so bad. Even though it's bad, even though it hurts, it's still not so bad. Because I'm glad I don't have to go through what Christ went through for me. As in 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 3, you therefore must endure hardship as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. This is the part that we chose. See, it's not like we were drafted, like your number came up, so they called you. You didn't have no choice. We had a choice from the beginning when we accepted Christ. I look at some people, especially some young people today, they get married, all they so much in love. They can't stand to be separated from each other. They all over top of each other. We're in a restaurant, walking down the street, they all up over top of each other. That's love. Soon as something happened, I didn't sign on for that. When the hard times come, oh no, this wasn't what I was planning on. And some people, truth be told, like that in their Christianity. As long as it's good, I'm a soldier in the army of Christ. But when times get hard, let me get back to you on that. And you have seen some, and I dare say, I know I have, at some point, yes, I've been there, I've done that. But a person told me once, when you learn better, you do better. You strive for it anyway. God already knows we're not perfect. So all we have to do is strive, try, really try. I just say, well, I tried, but, you know, really try. And he will help you. Use Job as an example. Do not allow suffering to dampen your zeal, kill your interest in the church, or lower your spiritual temperature. That's found in James chapter 5, verse 11. We like to refer to some people as fair weather Christians. As long as it's 90 degrees outside or 80 degrees, because 9 degrees is too hot. 80 degrees or 70, we'll come to church, but once it gets too cold, oh no, I can't make it. Get too hot, no, I'm sweating too much. All you got to do is just think about what Christ went through. And it should have an effect, because it had an effect on you when you said, yes, Christ, I'll follow you. And he knows. What did Peter say? Lord, I follow you anywhere. And he told him, you're going to deny me three times before the rooster crow. He didn't know it. When he said, I follow you anywhere, he meant it. But what happened? It wasn't like he was trying to do it. He didn't mean for it to happen. But when it happened, he felt oh so bad. That's us. We human. But God still made a way, and he still forgave him, as it is with us. If we pass the test, we come out on the other side with intact faith, stronger love, more joy, greater determination, and more wisdom than before. In other words, we grow spiritually through pain. Finally, how can we know which we are facing. Which trouble do we face? In this life, we see things imperfectly, especially when blinded by tears. You know, I said before, and I still believe it, sorrow is one of the worst pains we can go through, that suffering of losing a loved one. No matter who it is, you know, it could be your mother, father, grandfather, brother, sister, whoever that's close, husband, wife, cousin, niece, nephew. That's a deep cutting pain. And at that time, don't think that the devil is not going to attack you, because he will. Why? Because you're at your most vulnerable. You know, it's as if you were fighting in the war. You got your sword, your shield, your helmet, everything. You got all your equipment. You fighting, and you think everybody's taken care of. And some people still fighting over there. And you stop for a minute. And say, let me take a break. And what happens? Most of the time, you get stabbed in the back. When you're at your weakest point, that's when the devil gonna attack. You're not going to see him coming, but he's going to be right there at you before you know it. Still, we can determine much by using God's word and the intelligence that he gives us, that he gave us. In Genesis chapter 1, verses 26 and 27, and 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 16 and 17, God made us in his own image, which is saying a lot, because of everything else he made. Not talking about the mountains and the clouds and the moon and all the animals. He put us on 2 feet to stand upright above all the rest. And then he gave us dominion over all that. So he thought of a whole lot of us, his creation. We were the prize. We can use that. He gave us intelligence. And the most powerful thing he gave us is the choice. Regardless of what, bottom line, nobody's twisting your arm. You made the choice. You told God, okay, God, I'm going to follow you. So the choice is still yours, each and every day. However, it does not matter if we cannot determine the cause of our suffering. Now, you probably think, wait a minute. You just told me all this about the problems and where they come from, and now you're going to tell me it don't matter. It matters, but it don't matter. You ever heard somebody say that before? It matters, but it don't matter. It's to what degree? It matters. But in all, who's in control? Every case of suffering can be seen as if it is from God. That's one way we can look at it. So it don't matter. If it comes from God or we think it comes from God, then that should motivate us to want to do what we know is right. So we don't have to worry about it. Did it come from the devil? Did it come from God? Is he trying to do this? If you're trying to think that, yeah, it came from God, everything. So I'm going to motivate myself to do what I know is right all the time, because God is always watching. Yeah? You don't have nothing to worry about. You're covered. Then drawing near to him fulfills his purpose. If it originated from Satan, then drawing near to God frustrates our enemy. So again, it matters, but it don't matter. Because you're going to still put God at the top, and you're going to still work toward pleasing him. And if it's neither one, we still get a blessing if you put God on top. Consider this. If God is trying to get your attention, but we do not recognize it, or we ignore it, then we will not benefit from it, and we suffer for no good reason. As I said, we got a choice. We still got a choice. God says, you should do this. It'll be beneficial for you if you do this. You'll get this blessing if you do this. But never does he say, you're going to do this. Some parents tell their children, you do what I said. Well, why? Because I said so. That's the bottom line. God didn't do that. He shows you, and then he gives you the choice. That's the bottom line. We still have a choice. Confusion and disappointment has shaken the faith of God's great servants. It can knock us off our feet, as it nearly did with Asaph. We can focus on suffering and miss things of greater importance. We can feel sorry for ourselves and ignore others who suffer more. Isn't that our purpose, to do God's will and to help others? If we focus on ourselves and what we got, what I don't have, I would do this, but I ain't got this, and I miss out. Somebody else misses out. We lose sight. Our burdens can be great for us, but when we cast them upon God, he can carry them for us. 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 7. Casting all your cares upon him, for he cares for you. God will either avert what you fear or support you under it. So the bottom line is, God is there for us. God is there to help us in everything we do. But it's up to us to take advantage of it. That's what we have the choice. And even when he punishes us, he still has our best interests at heart. But the devil is always going to be at us. And he does not have our best interests at heart. All he wants to do is see us fall. Because that's the only way he can get back at God. So I hope this lesson may be somewhat beneficial to you, to help you try to keep your foot in the path of righteousness, to help encourage you to continue on when things happen. And you say, why me? Oh, Lord, why this had to happen now? Because believe me, it will. One day, it will. That is my lesson this morning. If you have any cares that you would like to be prayed for, any prayer requests, you can come forward as we hear our song of invitation. Thank you.